All right, as you can see, we're going to finish up the unrighteous steward this evening, and I don't think we'll even look at the parable itself anymore. Let's just look at those points there in that box, and let's ask the question, who made these applications? Every single one of them?
The Holy Spirit?
Well, no. Jesus, right?
Jesus, I know.
Jesus is making these applications, and so this is one of the most comprehensive parables as far as the difficulty of the parable itself versus the simplicity of the applications. He makes them all. And this is probably one of the most definitive scriptures in the Bible on money. And money as it relates to spiritual things. And so since I haven't preached on covetousness or the use of money for a while, I've just kind of decided to take a little more time than normal just to bring us back to thinking a lot more carefully about the use of our money, because as I've tried to make the point so many times, America is wealthier than any nation, with the exception maybe of Israel during the times of David and Solomon, but with technology, with drugs, with all of the multitude of things that we have today that we just kind of take for granted, we have a hard time seeing this. That's why I want to spend a little bit of time on it. We've already covered the first six, so we're just going to be looking at, we're going to cover 6 to 11. I think we got halfway through number 6. So let's start with that. What does the word mammon mean? Anybody know? And if you don't know, you're in good company, because nobody knows. The Hebrew word is very close to amen. What does amen mean? Something that's trustworthy, something that's reliable, right? How many times does Jesus say amen, amen before he gives a statement? And amen means, in the prayer, it means I agree with this prayer, I make this prayer my prayer. But when Jesus says it, or in this particular case, if that's true, then it means something that's reliable, which is kind of an irony, because is wealth reliable? No, not at all. Although if you have a lot of it, does it make you feel safe and secure and rely? You don't have to rely on anything else? So anyway, that's what some people think. Clearly, Jesus defines it with that adjective. Very, very last verse at the bottom of the page. What does he call mammon twice? Unrighteous. Now, what does unrighteous mean? You wanted to break it down. I'm sorry? Okay. It's negation of righteousness. And righteousness means you're fair, you're just, you treat people fairly and justly. Why would money, isn't money neutral? Can you do good things with money? Can you do bad things with money? Yeah. Why does Jesus call it unrighteous? And I think the answer is found on the next page. So rather than reaching for it, let's just look at that verse. Those who desire to be rich fall into what? Temptations and snares. Does that sound like something that's righteous? No. If it creates temptation, and it does, because if you want to be rich, sooner or later, when an opportunity comes and you have to do something a little bit wrong in order to get it, what happens?
Temptation.
Is that a temptation?
Yeah.
You know, it can be as simple as, hey, if you work Sunday, I'll give you double overtime. And all you have to do is miss 1 hour of services. Is that a temptation to some people? Would it be a temptation to us? Well, if you say no, then you're in the proper domain. If you say, oh, yeah, I'll definitely. I mean, it's just one service, and God will understand. Will God understand?
Yeah.
What does it say in Hebrews chapter 11 about God understanding, or chapter 10?
Not forsaken.
If you sin willfully, and if you trod underfoot the Son of God, that's what happens when you forsake an assembly. So once you see that, is it a temptation anymore? Not a chance. I'm not going to do that. But that's one of the ways. Another way, of course, is something unlawful, an opportunity comes along. But probably the worst way And we'll get into this a little more as we go through the lesson. But the desire for other things and the deceitfulness of wealth does what to the word? Remember the thorns? What does the thorn do to the plants?
Chokes them.
Keeps the sun from going down on them. So if, and there's no if about it, if wealth chokes the word, if it is a temptation and a snare, then it's not righteous. So money is not neutral. Money is dangerous. And he doesn't stop there. They fall into a temptation and a snare. Many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. So the desire to be rich, and that's what Jesus is dealing with here. All right, then look at the rest of it. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some, having strayed from the faith in their greediness, pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So, you know, we have a serious problem with fentanyl right now. A lot of people are dying. Why are people selling it anymore? Why don't they quit selling it? Money, right? So I'm selling something that may cost, 50, 60 people their lives, and yet what do I do anyway? Is that a pretty terrible thing to want? Is that a drowning yourself in destruction and perdition? You know, if you lose your agape love, which would cause you to never want to harm anyone, then you're sunk. So money is dangerous, and Jesus wants us to see it as unrighteous. Now, we can use it because we're insulated from it, because we know all these things. And that's why he says, make use of unrighteous mammon. And then he gives the parameters. And I think one of the main parameters is the one found in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 and 6. Be free from the love of money, content with what?
Such as you have.
Okay, content with what you have. Now, if we are content with what we have, are we insulated? I think we're insulated. I think that we can be protected. So anyway, let's look at these other two verses here. What I tried to do, too, is incorporate a lot of verses that we don't think about very much. So look at this verse in Proverbs. Let's see, where did we get to last week? Let's start in the back with you, David. Proverbs 23, 4 and 5. Top of page 2. Second verse down. Yeah. Yep.
Do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle towards heaven.
Okay, so if you're mindful to be rich, what are the chances you're going to get there? Not good. And so... I like the New American Standard enough that I put it in here too. Do not worry yourself to get wealth. Cease from your consideration of it. When you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. So God's children need to be righteous in unrighteous mammon. And we can do this. I mean, can an electrician be around electricity and not get electrocuted? Electricity is dangerous, but can an electrician get around it? And can a guy who's working on natural gas, is natural gas dangerous? But if you treat it with care and concern, and so this is dangerous, but Jesus says, you can handle it. You are my children. You are my people. So God watches how we use it. Now let's go back because we kind of lost track here, but let's look at number 6 again. It says, if you have not been faithful in unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you or to your trust the true riches? So God's watching how we use mammon. And I'm going to come back to this true riches in the next one, where he says, if you have been faithful with what is another's, who will give you what is your own? We'll talk a little bit more about that then. But What is the true riches? What's going to, after this life is over, what's going to be the true riches?
Those we played up in heaven.
Okay, the one, yeah. Did you guys both say the same thing?
Sorry, I just said spiritual blessings in heaven.
Okay, and how do we earn those?
We store treasures in heaven.
Okay, and how do we store treasures in heaven? Virgil?
Doing good works.
Okay, doing good works, which is giving alms. And what about the first day of the week? Does Malachi 2 still apply today? Can a man rob God? Can we not give as much as we should give? And God says, you know, this person's not showing faithfulness to me. I told the people in Malawi many times, God took away the tithe. Does that mean he wants us to give less or more? Everybody seems to think it's less, but what do you think those Jews did when they realized the tithe was gone? Oh, man, now we only have to give 5%. No, I don't think they did that. I think they said, you know, I think we could give more. And so God watches how we use our money. And if we use our money on the first day of the week, if we use our money to help people in their needs, when there's a famine, when there's circumstances where brethren need something, how we respond to that, and God's watching that. Because if we can't be righteous if we can't be faithful in unrighteous mammon, why would God say, okay, he can't use his money very well, but I'm going to give him the opportunity to go preach the gospel to this person. It's the one chance I have to reach this person, and I want this one to do it. Think he's going to do that? What about that passage in Timothy? Look at right in exact center of the verse. Paul, you want to read that for us? I'm sorry, the exact center of the page, number 2.
6:17-19?
No, 2 Timothy 2.
Oh,
I guess you're right. It's not in the exact. Close, though. Yeah, 2 Timothy 2, 20-22. Right underneath the one you were.
Now in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some unto honor and some unto dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet for the master's use, prepared unto every good work.
Okay, and before we comment on this, look at the verse almost just right above number 7 there, right at the bottom. George, you want to read that for us, please? Romans 9, 22-24.
What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy which he had prepared beforehand for glory?
Okay, so the Calvinist tells us God picked this back in eternity. He decided who was going to be a vessel of honor, who was going to be a vessel of wrath. Matter of fact, he forced Pharaoh to harden his heart so that Pharaoh would become a vessel of wrath. Now, do we believe that? See, we don't believe that. What made Pharaoh a vessel of wrath? His own choices, right? It wasn't something that God forced on him. What made Moses a vessel of mercy? When he became of age, what did he do? He chose to suffer ill treatment with the people of God. It was a choice. So the same thing is true in the church. This is outside of the church, but in the church, these vessels of mercy who enter the church, they also get assessed. Because in the Lord's church, there are vessels of gold and vessels of silver. Now, you may not see it as clearly here, but when you get over to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, where Paul says that each man is building on the foundation, some wood, some hay, some stubble, some gold, some silver, and some precious stones. And he's talking about Christians. And then he says, if any man's work is burned up. Have preachers worked hard and then lost a whole congregation? And it's not their fault. What happened? Free will, right? Free will. So in a great house, and God sees. So God picked Paul because God could see what Paul would do if he put him in that position. And like Paul said, by God's grace, I've worked harder than who? all the other apostles. So God can tell by how we use our money. And this is one of the ways that he makes an assessment of whether to entrust to us the true riches. So, and of course, he explains how he does that in toward the bottom middle, where it says, I, the Lord, search the heart, I test the mind, even to give each one according to his ways. So with Job, how did he test the heart and test the mind? Took away all his possessions. What does Satan say would happen if he took away all his possessions? He would curse God. But God had watched how he used his possessions, and what did he know? He's going to do just fine with this. So the point that's being made here is that when we have an opportunity to use our money for faithful purposes, instead of saying, well, I wanted to get this new car, or I wanted to get this, I don't think I can give very much right now. That's one way to go. Or to say, I can put off the car for 2 or 3 years. Let's help. And God watches things like that. All right, so let's move to number 7 then, right at the bottom of page 2. If you have not been faithful in what is another's, who will give you what is your own? Boy, this was a poser today. I spent a lot of time on this verse because it's very difficult. What do we really have that is our own? I mean, what did God not give us? Is there anything in this world that God didn't create for us? And is there anything in us that God didn't create for us? But there's one thing God gave us, and that's our eternal soul. That's ours. And whatever we do with it on the judgment day, are we going to lose it? Well, in one sense we will, because we'll be cast away. But that soul will still belong to me. I've just lost any good use of it. So what is another's is everything else. Everything else except our soul. Now, if I do what Paul did, I sacrifice the loss. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we get there, let's go ahead and turn to page 3. And let's make a couple of points here. The third paragraph, I just want to read part of it. The entire foundation of the gospel is based on one thing that is perfectly illustrated in baptism. When we join with Jesus in his death, burial, and resurrection, we die with him. And from that moment on, nothing is our own. Would you agree with that? Isn't that what he said in 1 Corinthians 6? You are not your own. You were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God. And so, excuse me?
I just read that yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right. So, let's keep reading. We have lost our life for his sake. Now, that's the verse that I want to look at next. Pauline, you want to read that one? Matthew 16, 24 through 27.
Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whosoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works.
Okay. So my soul is mine. God's never going to take that away from me. Now, my soul may end up in hell. Is it still my soul? Yeah, nothing. It wasn't taken. Now, I can lose it, but the point is, it's mine. Now, everything else, when you die, body, yours anymore? No, it's gone forever. How about your physical possessions? You got them anymore? No, they're gone forever. There's nothing else in this life that is ours. Everything else is God's. But the soul has been deposited to us as our possession. And so, if we can't use the things that are not ours, then what's God not going to do? He's not going to put us in a position to have things that are our own. Now, here's the point. Let's look at, there's two verses here at the actually three verses at the bottom of the page. And the first one, let's see, where are we? Virgil, you want to read that for us? Sorry, I had to tell you which verse you want to. Revelation 14:13. It's just above the verse that's in Philippians and Matthew and Proverbs. So just above that.
It starts out, then I heard.
Yeah, then I heard a voice.
Okay. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that ye may rest from their labors and their works follow them.
Okay, so these works, whose are they?
Ours.
So when we leave, what follows us, if we've used our souls that belong to us and used everything else that belongs to God for that purpose, and think back, you remember the parable? What did the man do with the other man's possessions? They didn't belong to him. What did he do with them? Well, no, he didn't waste them. He used them for what? To take care of him after he died. I mean, after he was put out of his position. So he used what's another's. And that's the only point of the parable is he used something that didn't belong to him in order to take care of him when he couldn't take care of himself anymore. That's exactly what Jesus is teaching here, except he's doing it in the spiritual realm. So I don't know that I want to take the time to read all these verses at the bottom. The first one I'll just refer to. When Paul became a Christian, what did he lose?
His position with the Pharisees.
Okay, that was one thing. What else did he lose? What does he say he lost here? I suffered the loss of everything. So Paul, when he became a Christian, he died. He suffered. Remember what Jesus said? If you lose your life for my sake, you'll gain it. And so you use the things that belong to God to prepare the works that will follow you. So the next verse, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure in a field. What does a man do when he finds a treasure in a field? Same thing Paul did, right? Sells all that he has. The last one, there is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing. One who makes himself poor, yet has great riches. We understand that verse now? See, he's talking about treasure in heaven. Everything else we're going to lose. All right, so the point is simply this. I'm a steward right now. Everything I own is mine. But is it mine? No, it's not mine. But I can use it to make it mine. Does everybody understand? I can use my money here. You know, it's just like, I remember when I was 19, this guy was a life insurance salesman. He comes to me and says, you know, when you die, your heirs will get a lot of money if you start making these. And what am I thinking at 19? Well, first of all, I'm not going to die. But secondly, what do I care if somebody else gets my money when I'm 19? I don't have a wife. I don't have kids. What do I have that I want to leave to anybody? So life insurance at 19 is a hard sell, right? But when you start having kids and you get a wife and you start realizing, you know, if I die, she's going to be destitute. Now it's worth it for me to make a sacrifice so that if I die, she'll be taken care of. So I start using what's another's, that money, in order to prepare for her. Now, does that make any sense? Isn't that why life insurance is there? Well, that's what Jesus is teaching us. That's, you know, we could give the parable of life insurance. Or we could give the parable of the 401k. Why do you put all that money in 401k? It's gone. You don't have it anymore. You can't buy anything nice. Why not? Because it's gone. Why do you do that? So that when you get old, you got something to fall back on. Isn't that what Jesus is telling us to do? When you're dead, you got something to fall back on. So, if you can't be faithful with what is another's, the Lord's not going to give you the true riches. He's not going to make you an Apostle Paul. He's not going to make you a Moses. He's not going to make you an Abraham because you're not reliable. It's the people who consistently show their faithfulness in lower things who are going to be given faithfulness in a higher thing. And so, again, this is just another option or another opportunity for you and I to sell all that we have and have treasure in heaven and prove our faithfulness. Isn't that what Jesus wanted that rich young ruler to do? Sell all that you have, give it to the poor, you'll have treasure in heaven, and then do what? Come, follow me. So for the rest of your life, you're going to have the true riches. You're going to have works that will follow you. So it was good advice. He didn't take it then. I hope he took it later. You know, I hope he took it in Acts 2 or maybe in Acts chapter 9, or excuse me, Acts chapter 8. Or I hope he took it. All right, so let's look at number 8. No servant can serve two masters. Now, let's read. Let's see, where are we? Martha, you want to read Hebrews 11, 24 through 26?
By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward.
Okay. Is there anyone who doesn't have to make that decision at some point in their life? At some point, we have to make the decision. I'm going to let go of all the treasures of America because the reproach of Christ is greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. So, who became Moses' master? God. If he decided to stay in Egypt, who would have become his master? Well, Mammon. Pride of life. Everything Satan tried to get Jesus to do that, to make that choice. But Jesus wouldn't make that choice. Moses wouldn't make that choice. And I hope by the time, most of us have been Christians for a long time. And I hope we've made that decision long ago. And one of the ways you can see whether you have or not is how you're using your money. If we're as generous today as we were, or even more generous, I'd say that's probably a better barometer, is to see, and that's Jesus' point, you can't serve two masters. And there's only two masters, God and Mammon. Mammon is wealth, the desire to be rich. The person who pierces himself with many sorrows because he has a love for money, which is a root of all kinds of evil. Now, again, here's just that paragraph of something we talked about right under that verse. It can be easily seen in such things as choosing to forsake an assembly to work, cheating on our taxes, or robbing God. It can be as complicated as the slow, tiny, almost imperceptible steps slowly choke the word and leave us unfruitful. Rachel, you want to read the two verses that are down below?
The Matthew and Luke one?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't see the Mark and Luke ad. So yeah, all three of them. They're very short.
Now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word and the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and he becomes unfruitful. The cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things entering and choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. They are choked with cares and riches, the pleasures of life, and bring no fruit to perfection.
Okay, so who becomes their master? Jesus was their master. The seed was sown, they obeyed the gospel, but what happened? Slowly, they received a new master, or they took on, they embraced a new master. Have we ever seen that happen in the church? You ever seen somebody who does that? Yeah, we've seen it. Scary. Because many times, you never would have dreamed that he would have been the one. Because early on, Christians know how to present themselves, because they're genuine. But over time, what do you learn how to be?
Content.
Well, no, you learn how to be a real good hypocrite, right?
Complacent.
I'm sorry?
Complacent.
Okay, complacent. Yeah. That would be one.
Yeah, that's your passing through that way.
But that's on the inside. When you're here on the first day of the week, what are you thinking? I've changed a bit. Most of the time when they fall away, it's a complete shock. Now, not always, but a lot of times it is. Vance, you had a comment?
Yeah, most of the time that occurs when over a time it's not just a blatant one day they're righteous and the next day they're not. It's a gradual type thing. I know we read earlier Proverbs 23, 4, and 5, but I really like the part where it says, because of your own understanding. That's, do not overlook overwork to be rich because of your own understanding.
Right.
That's what that's talking about. It's talking about the deceitfulness that we can actually deceive ourselves. Even in Proverbs 3, 5, it, I can't quote it, but it basically says, don't lean on your own understanding.
Yeah.
It's the same principle where we're deceiving ourselves and like, yeah, well, I got to pay the bills. Right. I've got to, you know, support the family. We've got, you know, college coming up here. And you start convincing yourself of why you're actually doing what you're doing.
So. Right. Now, can this happen to poor people? You may not have anything, but can you want to be rich and can you keep more than you should and end up proving the same thing even though you don't have a lot of money? Can you try to serve two masters with even if you have nothing? See, that's the problem, and that's what we have to look for. Like Jesus said, if you're faithful in a little, you're faithful in much. And if you're unfaithful in much, would you be unfaithful in a little? So the point is, it doesn't matter where we sit on the standings of how much money we have. This is a danger. Those people in the first century, they didn't have anything like what we have today here in this country. And yet, there were dangers here. And the poorest person, the widow was commended because she wouldn't keep it. She was going to give it to God, even though it meant she wasn't going to have enough to eat that day. She didn't care. And Jesus said, that woman put in more than all the rest. Well, what if she'd kept it? What would that tell us? She put in less than everyone else because she didn't put anything in. So, again, it's just an interesting point. Okay, so no one can serve two masters. Let's go ahead and turn to the last page. Let's look at these two verses. Nate, you feel like reading tonight? Top of page 4, Proverbs 11 and Proverbs 30.
He who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. Two things I request of you. Deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food loaded to me. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God.
Okay, so you can't serve two masters. And this man was terribly afraid. Because as the Proverb 11 says, he who trusts in riches will fall. So he says, I don't want it. Please don't give me poverty or riches. Because is riches a temptation and a snare and drowning men in destruction? So maybe we'd be better off if we never did become a millionaire or have a lot of money. So, all right. And then the last point, I just took 9, 10, and 11 and just kind of compressed them into one. Either he will hate the one and love the other. That's why he can't serve two masters. Or he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. And then he says it again. You can't serve God and mammon. Now, how many people have tried? Lots of people have tried. Has it worked out? No, because it slowly erodes. It either erodes your love for money so that you don't have it anymore, or it slowly erodes your love for God. So we have to look at that. Look at this verse right at the bottom. Jeff, you want to read that right in the middle where it says Proverbs 16:16?
How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver.
Okay, and then we have that song in our songbook. The law of the Lord is perfect. More to be desired than gold. Yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than the honey in the honeycomb. That's Proverbs chapter, or excuse me, Psalms 19. Paul?
Yeah, Proverbs 22, I used this in last time I preached, but Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be more desired than great riches. Favor is better than silver and gold.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and dig that one up. I tried to put everything in here. I just wanted to give everyone just a quick overview of everything the scriptures say about the dangers of money, the value of money, the goodness of money, the eroding nature of money. But here's an interesting point. Can two walk together if they aren't agreed? Mm-hmm. I'm going to Parker, and you're going to Brighton. So let's ride together. Can two walk together? Can't do that. I'm going to Oregon, and you're going to New York. Let's ride together for a while. You can't. You can't unless you're, unless, if you're going to Oregon and I'm going to Oregon, can we walk together? Can we ride together? Yeah. So what's the point of that? Well, God's in one direction. Where's money? See, money's in Oregon. Where's God? Just for our illustration. He's in New York, right? Silly, silly illustration because it makes no sense at all. But the point is that you can't go in two different directions. You, at some point, you gotta make a choice. And that's the whole point that Jesus is getting across here, is that, like it or not, if you have any desire at all to be rich, you're either going to have to crush it, or it will choke the word, and ultimately you're going to become unfruitful. So the whole point of this lesson is just to give us a checkup. Like I said, there's probably not a single person here who needs this. But if there is, are we supposed to preach in season and out of season? In other words, if I know there's somebody in here, that's in season. If I don't know if there's anyone in here, it's out of season. But I still might get someone. It's kind of like shooting a shotgun. Sometimes you get something you weren't planning on getting. And it's, sometimes it's a good thing. Okay, not always, but sometimes it's a good thing. All right, couple of verses here, and then we'll close our class. Let's look at the one second to the bottom. Let's see, Cheryl, looks like it came out perfect for this side. You guys, did I forget you last time? I thought I started here last time. Oh, man. All right, well, you guys are going to get it next week. We're going to go to the end, then we're going to come back and go to the end again, if I remember, which is probably not very good. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God.
No, the one down below that one.
Oh.
I don't have time for the other one, although it's a very good verse.
Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided, scoffed at, ridiculed him. And he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God."
Okay, so if there was any sense of, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think that's true. If there's any sense of scoffing or deriding, or I don't know that the Lord knows what he's saying here, what does he say? What is esteemed in men is abomination with God. So he's given us the marching orders, and so now we've got a pretty good set of a pretty good net that we can sift through, and we can see whether or not we need to make some changes. And as I say, maybe nobody needs to make any changes at all. Maybe people do need to make changes. But make no mistake, are we going to hear this again on the judgment day? Yeah, we're either going to have lots of riches, or we're going to be poor. All right, we'll stop there.